festivals come to our beaches communities all the time. So why is one this month leading some business owners to shut their doors? Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, we speak with beaches officials about plans for the Orange Crush Fest this weekend. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, why a dispute over Pride Month has actually sparked a federal lawsuit in St. Johns County. First, though, an update on the pandemic. Tuesday, the U.S. surpassed 600,000 deaths from COVID-19, the most in the world. It's a stark reminder that we're not through this time just yet, despite the incredible progress we've made with the help of vaccines. So please, everyone, go get your vaccination. Well, beaches leaders are preparing for the Orange Crush Festival this weekend. It's coming to town after moving here from Tybee Island in Georgia. It's going to be a lot of fun for a lot of people. That said, some businesses at the beach are closing their doors for the event or installing dress codes and other limitations. The event typically draws a young African-American crowd. Jack's Beach Mayor Christine Hoffman is on the line to tell us how beaches officials are planning for the affair. Mayor Hoffman, so good to have you. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And tell us a little bit about Orange Crush and preparations for it at the beaches.
Sure. So we first learned of the intentions of the Orange Crush quote-unquote festival to move to Jacksonville and the beaches back in March. So it's been a topic of discussion for more than 3 months now. We actually, our public safety officials learned about it prior to the citizens hearing about it. So we were able to do our homework, talk to Tybee Island, and start to plan for potential impacts on the community based on the history of the event there. But at that point, it was really unknown what exactly this would look like, because the organizers of Orange Crush had never even reached out to us with regards to our festival space. So when our residents and visitors hear Orange Crush Festival, they assume Seawalk Pavilion and Latham Plaza, which is where our festivals such as the Seawalk Music Festival, Spring in the Blues, things like that are traditionally held. But there had been no attempt to book that space. There's already an event booked, and it has been for quite some time. So that's why I've been putting air quotes around festival, because it's not what we would normally deem as a festival in our community. So really, until the kind of schedule of events came out about a week and a half ago, we didn't really know where exactly events were going to be occurring. And now that the schedule's come out, it's mostly not at the beaches. So there are a few. There's kind of a nondescript, you know, beach day. There's the Sunday beach day is at Huguenot Park, which there are two Huguenot parks, but it is specified that it's not the one in Jacksonville Beach. It's the one across the river. So really, a lot of focus has been on the beaches, but most of the events are not even anywhere near the beach. And I think visitors who are coming here, I think Sheriff Williams used a great word, the planning is haphazard. So what that's forcing us to do is plan for not specific events. You know, when we have our traditional festivals, we know we have an organizer's name, we have an insurance policy, they have to hire police and fire, and we have accountability to the use of our public space. With this, since there is no public space booked, we don't have that same level of accountability or predictability. When we do 4th of July, we pull in a lot of mutual aid and other agencies to come help us out with traffic and crowds. So we're having to do all of those things because we don't exactly know what to expect out of this. I mentioned the Huguenot Beach Day. Anyone who is around here, has been here for any length of time, knows to try to get into Huguenot Park at 1 p.m. on a Sunday, it's going to be a challenge. So, you know, if it were me and I get there and there's a long line, I'm heading out to the beach. So we just don't know how all of that's going to play out. So we're paying a lot of attention to it. We're keeping an eye on social media, on the Eventbrite page, and things like that, so we can try to anticipate traffic, crowds, any potential problems with regards to public safety. We want to make sure that we're prepared for that.
The organizers say they've sold as many as 20,000 tickets to attend this three-day festival in Jacksonville and at the beaches and in the city of Jacksonville. So it's certainly going to be popular. Now, as you mentioned, Mayor Hoffman, even though the majority of the action may not even be at Jack's Beach, What's your reaction to some criticism that we've seen? Some businesses have decided to close their doors this weekend for Orange Crush or install a dress code or other sorts of limitations, maybe to keep a lid on crowds and rowdiness, what have you. Some have seen that as a racist move because the majority of the festival goers are African-American, young African-Americans looking to have a good time. What are your thoughts, Mayor Hoffman?
Well, to go back to the number of 20,000, I have not seen that published by the organizers anywhere, nor would I necessarily believe that number. And on the tickets, you know, there's people are alarmed by how quickly the tickets are marked sold out, but we have no idea how many tickets they started with. So again, you know, if somebody said 20,000 people are coming, that's one thing to work with, but we don't even know that that's true. As far as the businesses go, we've been very busy out here at the beach. It's been a busy summer, and we're coming off a really hard year. And just like everywhere else across the country, our hospitality industry is struggling to hire and maintain staff. So I respect our business owners that have had to make decisions that prioritize the safety of their staff and their customers, but also the fact that it's just simply unpredictable. Will we have big crowds? We don't know. We think we probably will, but that's a lot of probabilities there that our business owners are having to consider getting their staff to work. A lot of our employees out here don't live at the beach, so it's not, you know, I can hop on my bike and ride down to the beach if I need to, but a lot of our employees are driving in. They're having to try to find parking just like everybody else. So our decision, I don't envy our business owners for those decisions that they have to make with regards to their staffing, with regards to their ordering. It's just that they have a lot of things they have to consider. We have kept them involved and informed from day one, and they have been very good about working together. And one thing I will say that has come out of us kind of bringing them together to keep them informed and talk to them is that our hospitality businesses, our bars and restaurants downtown, have gotten together and they've organized a Monday beach cleanup. And it's only going to be bar and restaurant staff. I know citizens are hearing this right now, want to know how they can come out and help. This is a fellowship event for them to get together as an industry and clean up the beaches on Monday morning. And I'm really impressed to see that. But I don't envy their positions, and they have to make the best decisions for their staff and for their customers.
We'll go to your calls in a moment about the Orange Crush Festival coming to town this weekend. 549-2937. Give us a call. We have learned that the festival, Mayor Hoffman, has come to Duval County after taking place on Tybee Island. That's the beach community near Savannah for years. The organizers say they came to Jacksonville due to civil rights violations and political injustices. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, one of the big differences, one, Tybee's a much smaller community. Chatham County is a much smaller county than Duval County. So when we started comparing, you know, the history of the event versus what we might anticipate here, one of the biggest differences that popped out to us is that Tybee Island allows open container. So when we were and that's a big difference when you're talking about, you know, a party weekend at the beach, whether you can walk around with an open container of alcohol or not. And that's true all year for us. We always, across the three beaches, do not allow open container. We do not allow glass on the beach. So those are things that are true across the beaches. And we took the opportunity this year, very early on, prior to spring break, to compile all of those rules that are common across the three beaches. Things like walking on the dunes. And these are things, again, that we see all year round, particularly in the summer months, that we decided to remind our visitors and our residents about these common rules. So we worked with our hotels. We worked with, again, our bar and restaurants. We worked with Visit Jacksonville to make sure we were getting those rules out prior to spring break and really every weekend since and throughout the summer so that people know what to expect when they come here because it is different from other beaches, even in Florida. So we want to make sure people were aware of that. These are the rules to come and have a safe, good time at our beaches, all three of our beaches communities. So we've been reiterating that since March, and we will continue to do that throughout the summer.
She's Jacksonville Beach Mayor Christine Hoffman. Mayor Hoffman, another time we'll have you back to talk about discussions about maybe changing the name of Jacksonville Beach. That's a conversation we'll have to have another day, though.
I would love to.
Thank you so much for joining us. That's Christine Hoffman, Mayor at Jacks Beach. Brittany Norris joins us now. She is the mayor pro tem for Atlantic Beach and a city commissioner there. Commissioner Norris, good to have you on the show.
Thank you, Melissa. It's good to be here.
And we'll go to your calls in a moment for a discussion of Orange Crush coming to town this weekend. Give us a call, 549-2937. Commissioner Norris, our partner News for Jax is reporting today that JSO is making space in jails and asking for help from surrounding counties for the temporary housing of inmates to plan ahead in case they need to lock up a bunch of disorderly festival goers at Orange Crush this weekend. So we're hearing about this. We're hearing from festival organizers that they've had trouble with businesses welcoming the festival, saying that some business owners have said, we don't want your kind of people here, your demographic here. It's my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you're the only African-American office holder in the beaches communities. Can I get your thoughts?
That's right, yeah.
Can I get your thoughts about the perception among some that there's been a paranoid or an overreaction to this festival coming, since it tends to draw young African-American partiers?
Yeah, and I've also seen some of the comments on Facebook. Unfortunately, there's a good group of people that haven't been too kind about this festival. Truth be told, though, this festival has left a specific legacy in Tybee Island. There's a reason that they were kind of pushed out. As far as the beach, as far as the opportunities there, I would argue that Orange Crush, its organizers and its attendees, weren't good stewards of what they had. Mm. So between that knowledge and then them coming to the beach, coming to our beaches, and not refusing, but at least not reaching out to work with cities, with law enforcement, with local businesses and such. I mean, this event's kind of a moving target. We don't know what to expect. So for some of these reactions, I think they're valid. You spoke earlier saying that, 20,000 tickets or something have been sold, which I have not heard confirmed by the organizers. But if they're talking about bringing in that number of people to an event that historically hasn't been the best neighbor to its host city, I think we need to hope for the best, but also prepare for the worst, unfortunately.
Right. And certainly at the beaches, all three communities, Jacks Beach, Neptune Beach, Atlantic Beach, you have a lot of experience with this. Planning ahead for a lot of crowds.
Exactly. Yeah. No, the communication and planning between our different law enforcement agencies has been spectacular. Between just even city staff and our elected officials has also been amazing. Again, we are, like I said, we're preparing for the worst, but we are definitely hoping for the best. And also with the list of events that just came out a couple weeks ago, their locations, as Mayor Hoffman said, they're across the city. They're across the ditch. And so we're hoping that that actually spreads out the festival and the festival attendees and sort of lessens the load on the beach cities. Jacksonville is a pretty decently large city. We are much bigger than Tybee.
Yeah.
So we're hoping that, too, also sort of diminishes any burden on any individual business or location. But again, we're hoping for the best. We're hoping that this is just a good, busy day for businesses, that they're able to make a lot of money and have a good time. But that, again, that nothing terrible happens.
We're talking about the Orange Crush Festival coming to town this Juneteenth weekend. Beach days, vendor villages, parties at several clubs around the city. What are your questions? 549-2937. Barbara in Jacksonville. Hi, Barbara. Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Go ahead.
I'm just calling in to say I've never heard of a city clearing out their jails and all of that in advance of a college kids coming into town. If these were white kids, all right, they drink, they party just as hard. And I've never heard anybody say we're going to clear out the jails because we're, you know, something's going to happen. How do they know what's going to happen? Who does that? And the mayor and the police department can try to sugarcoat it all they want, but it is exactly what it is. It's racism. If it wasn't touted as a black, mostly black event with college students, they wouldn't be talking about clearing out any prisons and all of this stuff that happened in Tybee Island and all these things.
Barbara,
it is what it is. They should have, what they should have done is said, don't bring it here.
Thank you, Barbara. Brittany Norris, Atlantic Beach Mayor Pro Tem. What about this? The perception among some African Americans in this city that there's been an overreaction to Orange Crush coming here, an over-preparation based on racist fears of violence or disorderliness, and that that African-American young adults are held to a different standard than white kids partying at the beaches. What do you say about that? What are your thoughts about that?
I mean, I am not naive enough to believe, to believe that maybe some actions aren't inspired by less than good assumptions about the folks coming into town. I would argue, though, we are not a spring break city. I'd be interested to know how Daytona or Panama City Beach prepare for those heavy seasons. This is something that we haven't seen before. Yes, we have had large festivals and events, but those have always been permitted. They've always come with insurance and with intense planning between organizers and city officials and law enforcement. So there is a very good idea of what to expect. Unfortunately, Orange Crush, the organizers are, dare I say, more fluid or organic. They haven't reached out by any permits. They're not utilizing public space. They're basically assembling on the beach, and anyone is welcome to do that. Unfortunately, it sounds like they might be bringing 10, 20,000 friends, and that's, again, where it's a moving target. We don't know what to expect. So am I disappointed that JSO is clearing out space in advance of this? Yes, but I also understand because they don't know what to expect. We don't know what to expect.
Hmm. Lots of tweets coming in to the show about the Orange Crush Festival. Perry tweets the show, only in America is a dress code okay, but requiring a mask is considered an infringement of rights. Michelle tweets us, these measures are racist. Businesses don't react in this fashion to other festivals that are not predominantly black. Laurel tweets the show, businesses have the right to make choices about whether to stay open or not. Local governments are preparing the best they can. It's unfortunate that the event planners are not able to coordinate with local interests. So, Commissioner Norris, you know, overlaying all of this anxiety is this is probably the first large-scale festival to come to town since we all shut down for the pandemic. And that's added some more tension to the mix. Businesses, local businesses do need the revenue. They've been through a terrible time. And as governments and businesses open back up, that has added a new layer to all of this. How do you see that as a public official?
I would totally agree with that. The chance for revenue is excellent. But also, too, considering that the time we're in, a lot of these businesses are short-staffed. It has not been easy to fill the ranks in a lot of industries nationally and here in town. I've seen so many help wanted signs. So as a business owner, if I were facing a rather large unknown like this and had to weigh between that potential for revenue, but also working with an understaffed setup, having to worry about public safety for my patrons, for my workers, for myself, I understand the dilemma that some of these folks are facing. And I don't blame anyone for closing. I don't think it's racist. I do want to say I understand, yes, this is a black crowd that we are expecting at this event. That being said, there are so many other factors happening here. This, again, it will sound like a broken record, but this group, unfortunately, has made no effort to follow the proper rules and regulations that other festivals and organizers have followed. Mm. They haven't communicated with local officials. They haven't communicated with law enforcement. They haven't met the bare minimum that we expect from other folks holding
so how did you and all your other fellow public officials find out it was even coming to town if nobody reached out for permits and all of the things that are typically done
Through social media and
social
news
media
Yeah, we were the same time that my citizens were finding out, I was also finding out. Actually, it was my folks are in Tybee, and my mom called because there was an article in Savannah. I'm sorry, they're in Savannah, so very close to Tybee. That's their beach. And so she called because there was an article in their local paper about Orange Crush coming here. And I think that happened before we even knew. So, yeah.
549-2937. Mark in St. Augustine. Hi, Mark.
Hey, good morning. Just want to say, your guest was talking about the history of this event in Tybee Island. And I think for a lot of people who are crying out or saying, hey, this is racist, the way that the city is reacting to this festival here, I think they need to look at what the history of it was in Tybee Island and maybe how that festival was performed or conducted up there, and why did Tybee Island not welcome them back? And so with that in mind, I certainly understand the skepticism of some to open up their arms and say, hey, bring 20,000 people down here. If it was a well-organized festival and they had worked with local city officials, municipalities, all that good stuff, I'd welcome them with open arms and say, have a great time. But in the absence of that, the only thing I think you can really look at is what has happened in previous festivals. And as a result of those festivals, why did that city not want them down, at their place anymore?
Thanks, Mark. Commissioner Norris, you mentioned you have relatives up on Tybee Island.
I do, yeah. So my folks, they live in Savannah. Tybee is their beach of choice. And they, a few years back, they happened to go to Tybee the day after Orange Crush had left. And it was not a good situation. So I know from news stories from literally my own family that in the past, this group, this event has not been a great news, unfortunately, for the host city.
Leaving a lot of mess?
The beach, unfortunately, was literally trashed.
But doesn't that happen with a lot of festivals? I mean, 4th of July at the beaches in Jacksonville, doesn't that trash the beach too?
Yeah, of course it does. But again, I would argue that I don't think people want that to happen, and adding another event where that's going to add another time that we have to go out and clean up after it. That's not a welcome event either.
Well, with all of that said, the event is coming to town this weekend. We will follow along, and I want to thank Jack's Beach Mayor Christine Hoffman, who joined us, and Brittany Norris, Mayor Pro Tem, City Commissioner in Atlantic Beach. Thank you so much, Commissioner Norris, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Much more still ahead. Later in the hour, some good news for your midweek, but up next.
They have refused to even read our Pride Proclamation for the month of June in front of an audience, which violates the Sunshine Laws, which violates the freedom of speech.
Why a refusal to acknowledge Pride Month in St. Johns County has now sparked a federal lawsuit. That's next.
Northeast Florida artists are making noise that's reverberating across the country, and the Jacksonville Music Experience is your ticket to the local scene. Music reviews, curated playlists, music history, concert recommendations, and profiles of local artists, all put together by our team of local contributors. The Jacksonville Music Experience plays it local and plays it loud. Visit jacksmusic.org to read and hear more.
Welcome back. Well, the refusal to declare a Pride proclamation in St. Johns County government during Pride Month has now sparked a federal lawsuit. Sara Bloomberg leads the St. Johns County nonprofit House of Prism and filed this federal complaint. I spoke with her. Hi, Sara. Thanks for being with us. Good to talk to you.
Melissa, thanks for even inviting me to come on and talk about these important issues.
Tell us more about your complaint in St. Johns County. You have filed suit during Pride Month against the St. Johns County Commission Chairman Jeremiah Ray Blocker and the county itself. You say they're violating Sunshine Law and federal constitutional rights over a refusal to do a declaration around Pride Month. What does your complaint allege?
Well, they have refused to even read our Pride Proclamation for the month of June in front of an audience, which violates the Sunshine Laws, which violates the freedom of speech, the First and 14th Amendments, the 14th Amendment on discrimination against LGBTQIA plus people. We wanted to have the county proclaim June as being Gay Pride Month. This is something that happens across the world. And St. Augustine, the city of St. Augustine, and the city of the beach of St. Augustine have done this for 2 or 3 years in a row. And so I decided this year I was going to invite the county to read the proclamation. I had a sneaking suspicion that somebody would say no and not read it.
What would you say to those who disagree with you that this is simply a symbolic gesture and not important, that other types of activism matter more? What's your response?
Well, this is actually more than activism. These are human rights. LGBTQIA plus people deserve to live in spaces, in communities, in counties that make them feel safe and supported. If we do not, we engage in self-harm. We suffer from mental health issues, not because we're gay, but because society is set up against us. The amount of youth that are homeless or have experienced homelessness because their families have kicked them out. People have been bullied and physically threatened. The statistics are astounding with how much damage can be done in societies, in counties, in towns that do not respect and celebrate even something as simple as Gay Pride Month. It creates this sense of community, the sense of awareness, the sense of safe spaces for LGBTQIA plus youth and adults. It's so much more, Melissa, than a fancy gay pride parade full of balloons and businesses joining. This is about people's lives. It's about people being able to live safely.
Is that what your organization House of Prism works on? Tell us about that.
So House of Prism was started 2 years ago, and our mission is the commitment to advocacy, education, and services for LGBTQIA plus youth and adults in St. Johns County and surrounding counties. We have a bi-monthly articulation group for youth ages 13 and younger. We have an annual dance for youth ages 13 to 19. We have monthly events for adults. We're starting a support group, a free support group for children and for parents. We are committed to creating an environment of support and respect and nurturance and love for LGBTQIA plus people. And that's why this proclamation is so important. It's a tiny little thing, but it all adds up.
This is in federal court, by the way. Any response from St. Johns County?
No, not yet. We're waiting. I've sent emails. The people that I'm working with, the Women's March Alliance of North Florida, we're working with them and my lawyer. We've heard nothing back. And I understand that because now it is in court.
Would you characterize St. Johns County as a friendly place for LGBTQ residents or not? How would you characterize the county overall, going beyond this issue over the proclamation?
So I have to be honest. My wife and I moved here from New York City, which is the mecca for LGBTQIA plus people. We don't just we're not just celebrated in June, but LGBTQIA plus people are recognized and celebrated and uplifted throughout the year. My wife and I moved here from Brooklyn, New York, and saw this lack of anything LGBTQIA plus. So we started a monthly meetup, which meets at Barley Republic, the third Friday of the month. And then I started House Prism with some friends because this county, this town, is so unsupportive of LGBTQIA plus people. There are no safe spaces. Well, there were. There are now. But there was nowhere that people could go to feel safe, to feel recognized. No community existed publicly. And this is why this work is so important.
Sarah Bloomberg of House of Prism in St. John's County will follow this case. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Lounge Radio around the clock. Allow the sounds of chill out, down tempo, new jazz, and reggae to relax and inspire you. Download the WJCT app or visit wjct.org/jacksmusic to start listening today. For the best music from the 60s, 70s, and 80s, tune in to 89.9 HD3, the WJCT app, or jacksmusic.org. We've got your music on Anthology on 89.9 HD3.
Welcome back. Well, Volunteers in Medicine is picking up stakes and looking for a new location. They were founded in 2003, and they're a vital organization for Jacksonville, a free healthcare clinic that provides outpatient primary and specialty medical services to working, uninsured, low-income individuals and families. And there are a lot of them in this city. Volunteer physicians, nurses, and support staff from all over the region donate their time and talent to keep families healthy, employed, and out of the hospital ER. Volunteers in Medicine is led by CEO Jennifer Ryan, and she's on the line with more. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Great to talk to you. So Volunteers in Medicine is doing such incredible work in this community. You've been located downtown for over a decade now. You, I guess, have maybe outgrown your space, looking for a new place to go. Is that right?
Yeah. So, Melissa, there's a couple things happening. The land that we're on is currently for sale, and we're currently in 64,000 square feet, and due to the need and the growing demand for healthcare services and free healthcare, we are looking for another space that is around 10,000 square feet.
Definitely the demand is there. And I would think, Jennifer, in the pandemic, it's only increased. Can you tell us what you've been dealing with over the past year and a half or so?
So during the pandemic, we've seen some interesting things happen, and they're on trend with what's happening in healthcare in general. Actually, people have been afraid to come to get healthcare. And what happens with that is people haven't been getting their screenings. They haven't been able to come get mental health services. So we've had a really big push, since the vaccine has come out, number one, for people to get vaccinated. And number two, we are safe. Come visit us. Come get your vital screenings that are so important, especially during men's health. We're seeing a lot of men that are not going to the doctor. So trying to get men to come in for their vital screenings. So now we're seeing a significant increase and our patients coming back.
Okay. And can you explain a little bit about the need? Because I think there's a common perception that an organization like yours isn't necessary, that health care is available to anyone who needs it, that anyone can get health coverage under the Affordable Care Act. It's a lot more complicated than that. Can you talk a little bit about the holes in our system and why so many people need volunteers in medicine?
Yes. So, Melissa, one thing that's been really great is recently the administration expanded who qualifies for the subsidies under the Affordable Care Act. So those that go up to 150% of poverty. And our job and our what we're trying to do is fill a gap. The people that we serve are those that make a little bit more than what Medicaid would cover for health insurance, and many of them make more than the subsidies they would get for the Affordable Care Act. They're people that are, you know, working in restaurants. They're, you know, the people that cut our hair. They're small business owners. So they make, and for one person, you can make up to $32,000 and qualify for our services. So our goal is to fill a gap, not to replace or duplicate. We want everyone to have health insurance. But if you don't qualify for programs, we're there for you to keep you healthy, keep you out of the emergency room. We provide your medications, mental health. We can do all of that in our downtown clinic and at our Westside clinic that is open 2 days a week.
Mm. And, you know, it's really incredible, too. Let's give thanks to the volunteer doctors and nurses and other staff who volunteer their time to give health care to your clients. You have dozens of medical professionals who just give of their time to volunteers in medicine. Can you talk about that aspect of the organization?
Melissa, I'm amazed every day at the generosity of our medical community. So we have 250 volunteers a month that volunteer their time here, and that's not just the physicians and nurses. It's people that work our front desk. But what's really neat about our volunteer physicians and nurses is you would immediately think it's just those that are retired. And we do get a lot of retired physicians and nurses who are very passionate about helping people. And so they want to continue their practice, keep their license, and continue practicing without the burden of insurance reimbursement. But I'm mostly amazed at those that are still working. I mean, we have doctors at Baptist, UF Health, Mayo, Memorial. They are still working, and they still want to give back and help and volunteer, and they love it. I hear continuously the patients are so appreciative. They're so thankful. They love how easy we make it for them. We don't have a lot of paperwork, a lot of things they have to do outside of just time with the patient. They can actually talk to them and spend 30 minutes to an hour with them.
Amazing. And now you just need some more room for what you're doing. So you want to get the word out that you're looking for a bigger location. And do you want to remain downtown? Is that still the most convenient place to be?
So we would love to be downtown. Our current location, we are very easy to get to. A lot of our patients actually work downtown, so it's easy for them to walk over. But we recognize, number one, there's not a lot of places you can either own or rent downtown with adequate parking. We have That's one of the nice things we provide for our patients and volunteers is parking. The other thing is being easily accessible. So, we don't want to be in a building where someone has to show an ID or there's security. We originally were looking in La Villa. There's kind of a medical hub occurring over in La Villa. So that's our dream area. So we're looking at opportunities there, but also just within 5 miles. A lot of our patients do drive, but being convenient to a bus route for those that do need to take the bus or public transportation. So staying within 5 miles of downtown. Our patients live all over, and we don't just serve Duval County. You can live anywhere in Northeast Florida and even Southeast Georgia and come to our services. So we've kept our mind open, just looking at opportunities. And we're very thankful to the Salvation Army. They've been wonderful to work with. But we know that, we've kind of known that it was coming. So we've got about 1 year to well, we've got a couple months we need to make a decision, and then within a year, I think we'll actually physically need to be moving into a location.
You know, in the pandemic, the commercial real estate business has taken a really bad hit, like so many other businesses, Jennifer. Everywhere I go downtown and other neighborhoods, I see signs for lease, for rent. I would think you'd have your pick of places to go right now.
So we're actually working with an agent who's helping us look at opportunities to lease. So you're right, Melissa, there are a lot. You know, it would be great if we were just moving offices. But with us, we come with a lot of needs. You know, with a clinic, you've got, you know, every room needs to have a sink, all of your exam rooms. So finding a place that will allow us to do that, but also, you know, as someone that is very conscious of how we spend our money and what we spend our money on, making sure that what we pay in rent allows us to still have the bulk of the money that we raise to go towards patient care. So it's finding that balance of what's affordable and what aligns with our mission and what we're trying to do to serve the community and healthcare.
I see. So, yeah, maybe not as easy as it might seem. So you're really trying to get the word out to the commercial real estate owners, businesses, and property owners who might not have heard about your efforts, which is why you're on the air today. That's who this message is targeted to. Is that right?
Yes. You know, I want to make sure that we've exhausted all options. So, you know, we've let our volunteers know. We've let our donors know. And so you know, now the next step is to let the community know, just so when we do finally pick a place, we've looked at all of our options. And, you know, we're also talking with other community nonprofits and trying to, you know, how great would it be? You know, we've got the DuPont Center downtown where we have all the nonprofit kind of administrative functions. But how neat would it be if there was a place for nonprofit service providers? So that you could have, you know, food distribution along with healthcare, along with, you know, other types of services all in one place.
That's a great idea.
I know. And so we've been talking with other nonprofits. How can we partner? How can we work together? Are there opportunities to share space? Because it would be great to have for, you know, our patients to come in and get multiple services, you know, possibly a clothing distribution on site as well. So having all of these things, you know, cause for us, we're very conscious that the people we serve are the working uninsured. So they don't have a lot of time in their day because they're taking care of family, they're going to work, and then they have to take care of their health and other needs, food needs, during their day.
All great points, and I would encourage anyone who can be part of the solution to get in touch with Jennifer. Jennifer Ryan, CEO at Volunteers in Medicine in downtown Jacksonville, as they seek a new location. Keep us posted, Jennifer, and thank you.
Thank you so much, Melissa. Have a great day.
A quick break, and in a moment, some good news for your midweek in our What's Good Wednesdays. That's next.
Congarean Pen, dedicated to agriculture and culinary endeavors, offering field-to-fork dining and outdoor experiences on over 300 acres. Sip, dine, explore. Information at congareeandpen.com. Announcing Vickers Landing at Oak Bridge, bridging retirees with an all-new Ponte Vedra Beach community, featuring new homes, a resort lifestyle, and a life plan for every stage of aging. Information at vickerslanding.com.
I'm Tanya Mosley.
I'm Robin Young. Presidents Biden and Putin meet in Geneva with relations between the U.S. and Russia at a post-Cold War low.
Election interference, cyber attacks, the Kremlin jailing opposition leader Alexei Navalny. We'll have the latest on their discussions.
Next time, here and now.
Today at 1 on WJCT News 89.9.
On the next Fresh Air, forget the Alamo. Brian Burrow is co-author of a new book that says the rebellion against Mexico in 1836 wasn't the noble cause enshrined in Texas myth. And some of the Alamo's heroes weren't the selfless martyrs to freedom portrayed in pop culture. The real history is entwined with preserving slavery. Join us.
Today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
The number of Americans who identify as bisexual is on the rise. Recent surveys suggest this uptick is being driven by young women, and in particular, by women of color. But how well do we understand the B in LGBTQ? I'm Amna Nawaz. We'll share your stories and answer your questions next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, a champion speller leads off our What's Good Wednesdays today. He's a precocious eighth grader at St. John's Country Day School who loves words and numbers. Even at the age of two, Eric Williams would make his parents drive around the neighborhood so he could read off the street names and the numbers on the mailboxes. Eric made his parents proud over the weekend when he competed in the National Spelling Bee's preliminary round among 200 spellers from across the country. And the competition is officially heating up. Three of Florida's eight original spellers made it to this week's quarterfinals. So congrats, Eric Williams, to you. Keep up the great academic work and keep up spelling words correctly. Well, First Coast author Craig Seaton has a message of empathy for those who've been dealing with loss, whether in this current time of pandemic or maybe even years ago. It's a positive message he shares in his new book, Some Perfect Tomorrow.
It's actually 34 short stories of families that I've helped through grief and loss and death and burials and headstones and memorial services for the last 20 years. And it's meant to give people an idea of just how people go through loss and so they can empathize with others that are going through it.
What a timely gift that message is for so many. Pick up Craig's new book wherever books are sold. Again, it's called Some Perfect Tomorrow. TIAA Bank and the Jacksonville Jaguars are teaming up again to offer fans the opportunity to honor those making a difference here on the First Coast. The 2021 TIAA Bank Community Champion Challenge will recognize exceptional individuals who are making a lasting impact by giving their time and energy to empower those who need it most. From now through July 9th, you can nominate a community champion. Go to tiaabank.com/community champion and do it today. TIAA Bank will contribute $1,000 to the charity of each community champion's choice. And each champion and the person who nominated them will receive VIP tickets to see a Jaguars home game from the field. And they'll have their story told during the game on the big screens. Pretty cool. So check it out at TIA Bank's website and nominate someone deserving today. Well, after going virtual during the pandemic, some good news for St. John's County. The St. Augustine Music Festival is back on this Saturday at the St. Augustine Amphitheater. Now, this is a free concert, so we really need to go check it out. And there is a special focus on Juneteenth happening this weekend. I got a preview from the festival artistic director, Jorge Pena.
We're still going to have the amphitheater as well as the Basilica, Cathedral Basilica of St. Augustine. We actually, this year, we're going to start with a very special date in mind, which is the June 19th. And that happens to be a very special date for the African-American communities, the Juneteenth celebration. And it's going to be focused a lot on the collaboration with the Ritz Chamber Players. And we're going to bring a lot of diversity aspect into SAMF for this year.
check it all out and enjoy the music. Go to samfestival.org for all of the lineup information. Well, with social distancing mainly in the rearview mirror, one of the city's biggest monthly events for gearheads out there is returning and teaming up with North America's largest monthly car show. Jacksonville Cars and Coffee is relaunching July 10th at the Avenues Mall as the inaugural edition of Caffeine and Octane Jacksonville. They're pairing up with the organizers of suburban Atlanta's Caffeine and Octane. That's billed as the nation's largest monthly car show. There's going even to be a special event called 904 Octane. That car show will have its inaugural edition at WJCT Public Media in September. Now, this brand has become so big, it's spawned a TV show on NBC Sports, and they might be filming some episodes here in our area. The Jacksonville event will celebrate local and national military vehicles with a dedicated parking and display area. This whole thing is really going to be so much fun for anyone who loves cars and automotive stuff. You can check it all out at our website at WJCT.org. And one more festival to tell you about. Don't miss Bluegrass Beer and Barbecue this Saturday downtown at James Weldon Johnson Park. Everything from baby back ribs to corn on the cob will be served up by the city's best food trucks. You can knock back a few cold ones from Champion Brands, Inc. featured breweries like Intuition Aleworks, Sierra Nevada, and White Claw. Live music with local favorites Can't Never Could, Fort Pierce's Pubgrass Band, Uproot Hootenanny, and Jacksonville's own The Firewater Tent Revival. Now, this concert is free. Masks are required. Again, it's Saturday. More information at jamesweldonjohnsonpark.org. And if you've got a tasty item to add to our weekly menu of good news, email us at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org and sign up for our What's Good Wednesdays e-newsletter right on our website. It goes out later today. And that's our show. Thanks for listening. Thanks to all of our guests and callers, too, along with producer Heather Schatz, director Josh Torres, editorial director Jessica Palumbo, and digital editor Bill Bortsfield. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on WJCT News, 89.9 Jacksonville. Catch our podcast up later today wherever you like to listen. And you can always listen through the WJCT app. Download it today. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great Wednesday.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.